CliffCentral.com.
That is Paramore and Still Into You. Ta-da. Very nice. I hope you're having an awesome Friday morning. CliffCentral.com keeping you company just after 7 o'clock on what is a pretty chilly morning across the country. Okay. So many things to do, so many places to go, so many people to talk to. We got Jonathan Witt joining us in a short while to tell us exactly what we need to do to sanitize and to get our organizations, our companies, our businesses ready for Monday, level 3. Many people will be returning to the office for the first time on Monday, so we need to know how to make sure that we are able to keep the place as safe as possible for those who work with us. We'll find out in a minute. I got this message from, who's this from? Let me just see here, give credit where it's due. M. Okay, so M is keeping themselves anonymous. They want to know, this is a tough one. We know we should never lend family money, right? But we've talked about this many times. What do you do when you owe, when you are owed money by friends, 27,000 Rand, and I need it right now, but they refuse to pay? What do I do? How's that, huh?
Oh,
yeah, that's not a great situation. Sure.
What do you even do? Where do you start?
See, the thing is, that's not like 500 rands, mm-mm, you know? So 27,000 to me would suggest it was a big deal. Either like you had to pay off some debt or it was some business thing that you had to do. And if you're going to lend someone that amount of money, I would think there was a bigger conversation. You know, it's not just someone saying, oh, can I get some, you know, a few couple of hundred rands just to fill up my tank or something. No, yeah, that's tricky. I think they should have discussed it before.
And people like that are not likely. If they're giving you the cold shoulder now about payment, you should never have lent it to them in the first place. But of course, you know, hindsight's 20/20 vision. So,
yeah, but if they're giving you the cold shoulder, it's probably because they can't pay it back, especially now.
Well, then they should say to you, listen, I can't afford it now, but I'll pay you 50 rand a day. I mean, 50 rand a month if I have to, forever, until I've paid it back. Like, if someone intends to pay you back, they will help you figure out a payment plan.
Yeah.
So if they've just said no, if they just refuse, which is what Em is saying happened here, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, no, that's a different story.
Yeah.
Mm.
So apparently Robert Downey Jr. is also having to defend himself in a movie that came out called Tropic Thunder many years ago, where he's supposed also to have had blackface on.
Yes.
Oh, well, that was just a bad movie in general, so yeah, he should be victimized for that.
No.
That's bad.
Just do not apologize. Anyway. Do not apologize to these lunatics. I don't understand it. People have just got to stop saying sorry to people they don't owe an apology to. If you were making comedy, if you were trying to make people laugh, you do not need to apologize for anything, including really off-color jokes. And I mean that, like disgustingly offensive jokes. My favorite comedians tell the most hideous jokes. If you don't like it, get out of the comedy club or stop listening to the YouTube clip. Just leave. Don't ruin it for everyone else.
That's why Chappelle's new work is the best comedy probably ever.
I love Dave Chappelle, and he just doesn't care who he upsets. Good for him.
Look, do you want to laugh?
Yes, please.
Let's get a little lighthearted now.
I hope it's offensive stuff, Sia.
No, this is going to be one of probably my favorite story I've heard this week.
Yes, go on.
It's totally something we can only discuss on a Friday. In a sex fantasy gone wrong.
Oh, dear.
You know it's going to be good when it starts like that.
Go on.
Two men were hired to reenact a sexual scene for a client of theirs. This client, also a man, wanted these two men to dress up as criminals and have machetes.
Uh-oh.
And force their way into his house.
What happened, like really to, what happened to Jussie Smollett? What happened? That's what this sounds like.
And you know, once that whole fantasy of them breaking into his house and then they do things to him, that is what he was getting off of, right?
Wow.
So you think,
did he give them a script? Did he buy the weapons for them?
No, well, it was the brief. That was the brief given to them. And he was going to pay them 5,000 Australian dollars. Mm-hmm. Well, there's one little problem in this whole entire scheme. The man who booked these two men for hire changed addresses, but didn't tell them.
Oh. So they broke into someone else's house thinking they were acting out a sex thing.
Oh.
Yes.
And that person thought it was a serious crime. Oh, God, this is going to end in tears, isn't it?
Well, thankfully, this case has been going on for months now, and they've finally been acquitted of the charge of entering a home armed with a weapon.
those poor guys, what a disaster. Ugh. And can we just, you know, can we keep our sex fantasies simple? There used to be a time where people would just squeeze my neck a little bit or just whisper something filthy in my ear. Isn't that enough that we need to now hire two guys with machetes to come and fucking break into our house?
Yeah. Well, this is really quite intense. Listen to the brief. So these men were told to break into the house, mm-hmm. and they were asked to carry machetes. Now, I also judge this heavily. They were also asked to bring a broom to use to stroke him. I don't like. Huh? Do you just brush a broom over his body?
Let me tell you something right now. This is the fault of Pornhub. And I'm a big fan of online porn sites that have done very well during lockdown because they've helped probably keep some people sane. But here's the problem. Because people have such peculiar fantasies, they're so peculiar, they're so niched, that, and there are enough people in the world who will want, you know, a broom-stroking, machete-wielding.
Oh, and to be tied up in his underwear.
Right, and being tied up in his underwear. You could probably type all those words into Pornhub and you would find there are maybe, you know, 1,000 other people in the world who are into exactly that same thing as you are. But I am not sure that this is good for us. If you need all of those things to get you off, let's just list them again. Not one man, two men, right?
Yes.
They have to be dressed up as criminals. They have to break into your house and play act that they are there to rob you and abuse you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You must be tied up.
Armed with machetes.
Machetes. You need to be tied up in your underwear. They need to bring a broom and stroke you with it.
Sorry.
If you need all, I'm counting, that's nine things that this person has put into this fantasy. They're nine different things. If you need those nine things to get you off, let me just say that maybe sex is not for you.
Hey, Gareth, you're a historian. The Romans built sex rooms, for goodness sake. We've become more restricted sexually than ever. Can you imagine what was going down then? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they didn't have Pornhub, dude.
They did in real life. They did Pornhub in real life. Gareth, they had sex rooms.
Bulelo, I just think maybe we should go back to basics here. Like, whatever happened, I've never been bored with just one-on-one sex. What is wrong with people?
Because we've become so repressed that we ignore the notion of everybody has perversions and that has nowhere to play. Dude, so we must be careful.
Dude.
But brooms?
Everybody has perversions. All of you. All of us.
Isn't this just a gem of a story? The judge who had to deal with this case ended up concluding that the facts of the case are so unusual.
The guy at some point must have thought, no one will find out about this.
Yes. So imagine being the resident of the new house, or rather the new resident of the house. This resident has not been named and said that it was just a little odd when he noticed a light on in his kitchen early in the morning. And he just assumed that it was his neighbor because he now has this neighbor that he's very friendly with and they have coffee
I've just put myself in the position of that poor person who moved into that house and had no idea this stuff was going to happen. And this person is not into being stroked with a broom or being tied up in his underwear or having guys with machetes. He must have been so afraid. He must have thought.
Maybe it was his thing, and he never knew all along. And now he's been freed.
God, that's scary.
It's wild. on a similar, less sexual note, a guy called Tom Brady, married to Gisele Bündchen.
Yeah, American footballer.
So he just moved to a new team, and he was going to his coach's house.
Yeah.
And because it's a new team in Tampa, he walked into the next-door neighbor's house instead of his coach's house. And then he's like, well, hey, what's going on here? What are you doing in my house?
Yeah, I mean, imagine if you
and it's Tom Brady.
The world's most famous footballer walks into your house.
That's quite
a big deal.
Wild. In this case, the judge ruled that evidence did not suggest the men's actions were intentional. Look, I can't even take the official statements in this case seriously. So the judge says they carried the machetes either as a prop or something to use in that fantasy. The fantasy was unscripted and there was discretion as to how it would be carried out. And then a lawyer of one of the accused, his name is Terence Leroy. This is one of the accused, said it was a commercial agreement to tie up and stroke a semi-naked man. It was a commercial agreement to tie up and stroke a semi-naked man in his underpants with a broom. Entry was not with intent to intimidate.
Well,
so imagine how confused they were when they came into the house and the guy was fully clothed.
The things that happened in Australia.
There's a message from Monique. She says Australia is so fucking boring that it makes sense in some way.
No lies detected there.
Jeez, what a bizarre story. Hopefully that makes you feel better this morning.
Yeah. We can only hope. Apparently Australian comedy is often about exploring people's sexual tics and fantasies. There's a lot of Australian. Well, listen, I mean, people, don't get me wrong, people are always going to have their fantasies and their different kind of kinks. That's fine. But this is so complicated.
Yeah.
And you imagine how much planning has to go into this. And this is all just to get the guy off. He must feel so dumb after he's finished with the deed.
Oh.
He'd be like, wow, I spent a lot of money. I went to so much trouble. You know, he must have felt so dumb when all of this happened. Now the whole world knows what his kink is, and it's so particular.
But does it trouble you more that you know that kind of stuff is happening around you, whether you like it or not? That is happening.
Yeah, I don't care what people do, Mbulelo. I mean, you could have a next-door neighbor who is into some really weird shit, right? And consenting adults can do whatever they want to each other. But I just feel sorry for people who have to go to such lengths to have to have an orgasm. It just feels like that is so much effort for what essentially should be easy. Other animals can do it. Wild animals can have sex with each other like they have for a million years, and they can get the deed done, and it can be over, and then they can carry on with their lives. Humans, we will dedicate hours, years, money, time. We'll build rooms in our house with bizarre equipment in it, and we'll dress up in outfits that cost like millions of rands, and we'll fly to different cities just to get our rocks off. It's just mad if you think about it. And you know, if you were an alien again and you landed on the earth, you'd say, wow, look at how much effort these people go to just for that moment of sexual climax.
Crazy. It's hard to say I won't judge, because screw it, I'm judging. Imagine if you were just minding your own business, you have someone and you're about to get things going, and they say, just wait a minute, and they have to go to the kitchen and come back into the bedroom with a broom. Oh, hell no.
Well, I mean, this dressing up thing.
I don't know about that.
The dressing up thing is just incredible to me. Like, there are some guys and girls who just love the dressing up so much. You know, they're almost doing cosplay in their house every single day.
Yeah. They're wearing, or even just like a different wig or something like that. Or you know, he's wearing her underwear.
He'll look at his wife and he'll go, oh, Deirdre, you know, you turn me on, but I'd much rather have you dress up as a Christmas elf. And then poor old Deirdre has to go off to the cupboard, and they've got a whole dress-up cupboard, and she has to find the elf outfit, and then she has to have a shower, then she gets dressed in the elf outfit. And by the time she comes out, like, Tom is asleep. Deirdre's gone to all this trouble putting on her fake beard and
I've taken part in all of that stuff, and it's just fun, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so bad. I have never been bored enough with sex. Like, sex is just great on its own. It really is.
No, sometimes it's fun to shake it up.
I don't know. Then I must be boring. Maybe all
Gareth, you need to live a little.
All these people have...
You need a bit of fantasy in your life.
You're sexually repressed.
Wow.
You want something different.
A dress-up cupboard. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, what do you do at Christmas when you're dressing up as that elf and then in front of your kids and your grandmother and you're thinking, last week I was using this and I was, that's nasty, y'all.
Yeah. Well, here's a comment that's probably quite relevant from Hugo. He says, maybe because we used to be cavemen and used to clobber each other and steal each other's wives. Now that we're civilized and bored, we need different kicks for sex. Maybe that's an explanation.
Maybe. I'll tell you what else is going on in Australia. A mining company has just blown up a 46,000-year-old Aboriginal site with no regrets expressed. Now, 46,000 years old isn't that old if you look at the line of time.
By the way, are the Australian Aborigines looting the Target shop there and stealing TVs and burning down the police station? Because
not this week, no. Oh,
okay, all right.
No.
Just
but apparently this site, previously there have been things found there like a 4,000-year-old belt made from human hair.
Oh, that's my kink. How did you know?
A tool made from kangaroo bone dating back to 3,000
years. Oh, yeah, you're turning
me
on. Yeah, keep going. Mm.
So, yeah, this tin mine is just blasting its way through sacred land in Australia.
Yeah, we don't care about your history, mate. We just need some tin. No. We're going to get some tin out of the earth. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
So is the issue the fact that they did it without consulting anyone?
They're destroying part of human history. It's like those Taliban who blew up the Buddhas of Bamiyan. They just blew up the Buddhas, these 2,000-year-old statues, because it was against the Taliban's current religious fascination. This is even, I suppose, in some ways more callous because it's just for money. They want tin, the metal.
The thing is, it was done with state permission, but that just shows Australia's thinking in terms of heritage and conservation.
No, sorry, I take that back. I think it's dumber to blow up the Buddhas of Bamiyan because you have a different kind of religious fantasy than it is to get tin out of the ground destroy some. I mean, I think both are heinous crimes, but
iconoclastic sort of approaches to things have been so interesting.
So, look, can we just agree that if your thing is to blow up ancient statues that turns you on, that there's probably something wrong with you? Is that at least, because if you dress up like a Christmas elf, then maybe you're allowed to do it. You're not destroying anything and you're not ruining anyone else's life. But if you're going to blow up human history and something which belongs to all humanity, to our story, and you know, this is always the thing that bothered me. I didn't mind that the people of Egypt had decided they wanted to revolt against the government. And then, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood came in and it ended up being a disaster anyway. But I was only worried about them looting and destroying the Cairo Museum. That's all I cared about. I couldn't care less about how many protesters got into fights, how many people didn't make it home that day. I was interested in, like, don't ruin the ancient Egyptian artifacts, because that doesn't belong to you. It belongs to all of humanity.
So what say you of iconoclasts then, Gareth?
I'm one of them. But I don't believe that I don't think any icon is more valuable than another necessarily. I think, you know, there are aspects of human history which we all are the heirs to. There are statues and little works of art and, you know, little figurines and paintings and drawings. And those things belong to all of humanity. And I don't think that there's any human being with any belief system that has the right to destroy that stuff.
Mm. Yeah. And then there's a a new launch by Crayola, the crayons, and this is pretty fitting considering the whole Jimmy Fallon thing in our discussion about skin colors.
Yeah. What have they got? Jimmy Fallon Black?
They've launched a box of crayons, which is called Colors of the World, and it represents the world's diverse array of skin tones. And I mean, I think back
They're going to be in shit now.
Not at all.
You didn't make my skin tone, so you racist.
No, they've actually teamed up with a makeup company, and done this thing really properly, where they've worked out exactly the different pigments across every type of skin tone.
That must be like the biggest crayon set in the world. It must be like a million crayons.
You see, the thing is, you can mix to just like you would a foundation. So they're very similar to foundation colors. And makeup companies in the past, and actually currently still, often face backlash when they release a new range of foundations because they don't suit everybody. But most times, and we found this ironically enough with Rihanna's makeup set, is that there weren't enough of the really dark shades.
I use Rihanna's one, and I've never had a problem. Yeah.
Do you use the Autumn Peach?
Rihanna's skin color is exactly the color of my ball sack, so I find that is precisely the color I need if I need to cover up a mark on my balls. So yes.
So now you can actually draw a picture of your balls with the exact color crayon.
American Oxygen. Yeah, that's what I sing when I do it in the mornings.
I love this because I remember growing up and our Crayola crayons had one that said skin color.
How self-absorbed do you have to be trying to find your skin tone in a Crayola crayon set? How self-interested? How important to you is your skin? Your skin, this organ, which is colored by the sun, it's colored by your ancestry. There are so many influences that have nothing to do with you. And you think
this is
my color. I'm the Rihanna set number 5.
No, think about artists and how they've got to find the exact color of skin tones.
I painted a picture at the beginning of lockdown. You know how you make skin color? You take brown and you take some yellow and you take some pink and you take some white and you kind of figure it out. And that's what we all are. We're all a combination of those colors. Stop thinking you and your skin are so important. Fuck's sake. What is this? It's Friday morning, and I can't believe we're talking about such dumb stuff. Jimmy Fallon being accused of blackface and Rihanna's color set. It's mix your own. Grab a bunch of paints and try to figure out what it is there. It'll be fun. And then paint yourself. But paint your asshole first and then start from
there. Oh, my God.
Oh, Lord. I'm not going to say anything.
All right. Anonymous, please. My Skillumpy and I keep it simple. We like doing it in public places like Mr. Price's change rooms.
I'm never using one again.
This is an exciting discussion. Yes. Anonymous saying they do it. When you go into that Mr. Price fitting room, they might have been there before. Think about that. You put down your cell phone on the bench.
No.
Here's a good message. This is from Spo, who says, I'm still...
Why did the tone of your voice change, Gareth? Why do you sound a little seedy now?
What do you mean?
You're now reading the messages like this.
No, because this is Spo. He says he's still vomiting from Damon's stories yesterday.
I thought you were trying to put your sexy voice on.
No. With Damon's stories, it's the opposite. Trust me. Damon, he had some stories. Leanne, you would have actually just dropped the call and left the show.
Should I listen to the podcast?
Yeah, do it. Please, I'd love to hear your feedback on Monday.
Okay.
So gross. What happened on the burning platform yesterday? Your guest went round and round in circles and never got his opinion or point of view across clearly. It seemed to flip-flop through the whole debate. You know, I don't know if that's entirely fair. I tried to give him a fair shake at it, Alistair. But, you know, some people, it might be the first time that they've been on our show. It might be they might just be nervous. They might have, I don't know. He's a smart guy, there's no doubt. And you're talking about our guest Alicia yesterday, who I think probably just needs a few more shakes at it. Let's give him a chance. There are some guests. Unati Kwaza was a real hit. People loved her. So maybe we got to have her back again. You know, you take your chances. You have different. I want different points of view. And some people are, for example, there's a brilliant journalist, a really, really brilliant journalist. One of the ones that I have the world of respect for. And he's been in newspapers for years. So I messaged him on Twitter because we follow each other. I said to him, hey, dude, would you mind coming on the show? And he said, look, I'm great when I write, but I'm very uncomfortable when I talk. And I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to have to say no.
That's one of the most refreshing things I've ever heard. That is a self-awareness that is lacking in me and in so many of us.
This guy,
that's brilliant.
He really is one of the finest journalists in South Africa. And I'm not going to give you his name because we might still get him on. You know, I might be able to talk him into it. And at this point, he's just, I don't want to go and talk. He said, my favorite thing is to write. So that's what I'm good at. That's what I'm going to do. Anyway, listen, we've got to move on because there's so much going on this morning, and it is almost the weekend. Many of us very excited about that. Jonathan Witt is on the line. He is a doctor. We've had him on many times when he isn't, and he's been so funny through lockdown. If you're following him on Twitter, you'll know what I mean. In fact, if you're not following him on Twitter, you've got to stop listening to the show. He's hilarious. No, he's hilarious. He's been funny. His surname is Witt, for God's sake, and he's shown much of it. So
I'm not sure about that, Gareth. Lots of people do not find my Twitter funny at all. But yes, I've had lots of fun, so fuck them.
And you also liked the movie Tropic Thunder. You probably don't think Robert Downey Jr. should apologize, right?
Oh, no, not at all. I think that movie was a masterpiece. I don't know what he is talking about.
Oh.
By the way, I couldn't Tom get Cruise. Into it.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise in that as Les Grossman. Go and YouTube that straight after the show, listeners.
Mm. Arguably Tom Cruise's best role ever.
Not even arguably.
Yeah. Well, right, he's done some good stuff.
So I haven't got you on this morning for the usual reasons, so we can talk about, you know, American politics, or we can talk about social media stuff. I actually want to talk to you about something serious because, first of all, you are a doctor, but you've been working with the St. John's Ambulance people for a long, long time, and they really are a great organization. You can go to stjohn.org.za to find out more. First of all, just give us a background about St. John's Ambulance, and then tell us a little bit about what you've done with them.
Well, Gareth, you know, it's an international organization in more than 40 countries across the world. It's actually one of the oldest organizations in the world and one of the oldest brands, almost 1,000 years old. Essentially, it's a humanitarian organization, does various work in the countries in which they're involved. In South Africa, that extends to various health services, so everything from optometry to ambulance services and medical services to healthcare workers that go into communities to help underprivileged people, people with terminal illnesses. So that's the kind of work the organization's involved in. And then a lot of training as well, everything from sort of kind of first aid training, occupational health and safety, those things. So that's really what the organization's about in South Africa. And yeah, as you mentioned, I've been involved with them for a very long time, actually since I was a kid, because they train kids in first aid and give them an opportunity to sort of help out with charitable initiatives in communities. And you know, obviously it's a charity, but it still has to run as a business. You know, income has to equal expenditure. And so given the background with the expertise in all the medical side of things and COVID and what's happened and all the regulations, they've pivoted the organization to be able to offer a whole bunch of services in relation to COVID and the government regulations, which are required.
It's a great organization. And you mentioned health and safety and occupational safety. So let's just talk for a minute, because a lot of us are going back to work for the first time next week. You know, level 3 means basically everything except tobacco is back online, and restaurants, obviously, public gatherings. So a lot of people's businesses will be opening up and people will be returning to the office for the first time. There are a couple of rules about how to keep the place safe. Now, I know you have various opinions about COVID-19, but the regulations state that, for example, the place has to have an officer who is in charge of health and safety. There needs to be hand sanitizer. People need to wear masks in certain places. Tell us what those rules are and how we might be able to make sense of them so that we can make our own lives just a little bit safer and more compliant.
Yeah, Gareth, you've summarized it quite well in terms of...
Oh, really? That's it? Yeah,
pretty
okay.
Much,
all right. Well, it's nice pretty, to talk to you, Jonathan. Cheers.
It's pretty accurate. I think everyone's trying to figure it out, and that's really what sort of the service offering is about. You can read through that, and you can kind of do exactly what you've done, summarize it relatively succinctly in all those things that are required: hand sanitizer every time, plenty of it around, and obviously any time someone enters the premises. And there's a whole thing about screening. You have to screen all your staff before they come in. You've got to keep a register of that.
What does screening involve?
So you've got to have a temperature gun, preferably, and you've got to take temperature on every single person, and then you've got to ask them specific questions around contact with other people who have COVID or may have be under investigation for COVID, and then you've got to ask them if they've got any symptoms of flu symptoms, essentially. If they answer sort of yes to any of the questions, unfortunately, you can't sort of let them into the workplace because the assumption would be that they might have COVID. Yeah. listen, I don't make the rules. I'm just trying to help people follow them.
So in other words, I'll be within my rights on Monday if Sian Bulelo come in, I can say, have you had sex this weekend? And they have to answer me. Did you have sex with a COVID positive person? And they'll go,
Gareth, wielding a machete while breaking into your house.
HR violations still exist in these times.
Yeah, I mean, how does this help any? This isn't necessarily a foolproof scheme. There's a lot of gaps in this.
Yeah, look, I think there are gaps. Unfortunately, a separate discussion around, the validity of a lot of these things. Unfortunately, I think businesses are trying to do the best they can because they don't want to be shut down. They don't want to cause trouble. And there are instances of businesses having got into trouble, having been fined and having been shut down by government for not following these regulations as strictly as they would like them to be followed. All these types of questions are not meant to be as specific as you mentioned. It's just meant to be, have you been in contact with anyone? Yes or no? All the questions are yes or no, essentially. Okay. And look, most businesses may be able to do this themselves, but for example, one of the services St. John Ambulance is offering is they'll send someone to do all the screening for you. So if you have 500 employees, they'll send medically qualified people in the correct PPE and they'll arrive and they'll do all the screening for you. And take that kind of off your hands. You're also meant to keep hand sanitizer. You're meant to have masks, meant to have all those things. If you don't have that stuff, we can supply. You're meant to be actually doing a sort of a clean of your office and then intermittently cleaning surfaces and all that kind of stuff. Those services, if you need cleaning services, are offered or advice. Then you're also, according to regulations, meant to actually train your staff in COVID. You're meant to make sure they understand what COVID-19 is and what the risks are.
Leanne, Fundo, are you guys all okay with COVID? Good. Okay, great. Sign this form.
What?
Sorry.
That was very quick.
Well, just trying to get through the process.
So if those who feel they want some sort of training course, given to their staff, that's also on offer. So it's trying to be sort of a full service offering around COVID-19 and whatever sort of the corporate world would require.
Is it true in the regulations that if someone sneezes on you, you can just chop off their head right there and then?
That is correct, Gareth.
Yes.
I think that's subsection 3A.
Yes, I thought so. All right, I'm just checking the regulations. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so... dude, what's going on with our current obsession in this country with this hand sanitizer? Do you find hand sanitizer again, now I'm asking you more, not as a representative of St. John.
Or
as a doctor or anything else. Is this hand sanitizer thing that we've got going on, is it really foolproof? Does it do a lot? Would you recommend mask wearing, for example?
So on the hand sanitizer, I mean, it does do something. If you're using a correct hand sanitizer, I mean, it does a few things. Number one, it probably does kill the virus. Number two, it destroys your hands. I've become a bit like Sear. I'm moisturizing quite often. But
there's nothing wrong with that. Let's just be honest.
The issue is that I think we might have gone a little bit overboard. In terms of the hand sanitizer, especially if we're going to go into public now. So every time we walk into any shop, we're going to get sprayed with hand sanitizer. So you're going to go to a large shopping mall and you're going to have your hands sprayed 10 times.
Yes.
But you won't have touched anything in between. What's the logic there? There also seems to be way more evidence emerging now that the virus doesn't survive on surfaces for that long.
Okay.
So if someone sneezes into their hand and they touch a doorknob and you touch a doorknob relatively soon after that, you're going to get whatever was out of their sneeze. That applied to influenza before COVID. But unless it's sort of wet or, you know, been active on the surface recently, it's very unlikely. So I think the hand sanitizer helps to kill the virus.
Yep.
Obviously, but maybe we might be overkilling it a bit. There's other concerns around using hand sanitizer all the time. I mean, you've referred to this point about, not exposing children, for example, to bugs and germs.
Mm-hmm.
We have an immune system. It needs to be challenged. And if you keep washing your hands all the time, you actually have things called commensals, which is bacteria that lives on your skin permanently. And it actually works to protect you from bacteria that shouldn't live on your skin. And when you keep washing your hands with hand sanitizer, you kill good bacteria. The same as when you take an antibiotic, you kill good bacteria in your gut.
Right.
And then sometimes people end up with diarrhea as a result of that. Women get thrush as a result of that sometimes. So using this all the time can have other effects, and I'm pretty sure it will in the long term. I think we're going to get a rise in some resistant bacteria, certainly probably in fungal infections on people's fingers and nails and things like that.
Okay.
And then masks. Look, Gareth, there's a lot of arguments about masks. I think there's a medical argument and a freedom argument. Obviously, the freedom argument is being forced to do something. We said this, I think we had another chat where we said that masks essentially are not 100% effective. Even medical masks are not 100% effective. N95 literally means 95% of particles are not allowed into the mask. And we're hoping, based on the rating of an N95, that the virus is filtered out because of the size of the virus. That's not 100% for sure. And if you're wearing, a standard mask you bought somewhere, real mask, it doesn't 100% protect you. The idea is that it gives you some sort of protection, especially from symptomatic people. And I think that's really the important point. If you're not feeling anything and you're asymptomatic, we're still not really sure you're likely to pass it on. In fact, the evidence is more and more showing that you probably won't.
Okay.
This is also why they believe that kids don't really give it to adults, is because if they get it, they get such mild illness that they're not shedding enough virus. But there's a lot of debate around this at the moment. Masks are obviously in there, and I think for me it's like if we wear masks and it sort of slows the spread, inverted commas, and keeps the government happy from making us putting us under house arrest again, then unfortunately it's something we have to do for the time being. The good side is that I think we're going to peak very soon, and I think this is going to be over.
Really,
and I don't buy the models.
This is very exciting news because I don't know why anyone would be upset about this, because it seems that the media...
People are very angry.
Why would the media in particular be upset that suddenly we look like we are going to hit the peak and then we're going to start seeing a decline in this virus and its efficacy to ruin people's lives and to put us into house arrest and even to kill some people? Why would someone be against that? You're telling me that the latest findings are that it kind of reaches its apex and then it starts to fall off. And what, we develop a resistance to it. We find that it is not as dangerous as the models predicted. Tell me what the science is on this, because for all of us, it's just opinion. For you, it's research.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think everyone's become a bit of a doctor and epidemiologist and everything else in the last 3 months. But
which must really irritate you, by the way, because you actually studied this stuff and you practice all the time.
Yeah, I suppose. But I suppose clinical epidemiologists probably get irritated with me for not staying in my lane.
All right.
Look, I got in trouble for a – not in trouble, but I got pounded over a tweet I sent in February when someone asked what's going to happen with this coronavirus. And I said, well, it's going to peak and then it's going to plateau and then it's going to decline. And I expect, you know, it will be out of the news sometime in March. Now, obviously I was very off on that because I wasn't off on the peak and the plateau and the decline, because that's what all viruses do.
You were just off on the timing.
Well, I was off. I said 6 to 8 weeks. And if you look at the virus and its peak and plateau, if you leave it alone and you don't lock down, essentially the outcome is the same, but it just happens a little bit quicker. And it is now they've narrowed it down to about 70 days from first case to end. So you can be over this entire thing in just over 2.5 months. What I misjudged was the media malfeasance that would happen in association to this, the sheer panic and the sort of fear mongering that's gone on. The reality is you will remember in March, we were told that this was 10 times as deadly as flu,
yes,
if not 20 times as deadly as flu.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, initial WHO reports were that it was 3.4% case fatality rates. The later CDC reports are somewhere around 0.26%, which is essentially a bad flu season. You know, a good flu season is 0.12, 0.14. A bad flu season is 0.3. And so that's where we are at the moment. It's looking as if it's not a good thing. I'm not praising, saying we shouldn't have reacted at all, but I do think it was a major overreaction, and the case fatality rate certainly dropping. And it does look like we're peaking. I mean, there are models, certainly in South Africa, mm-hmm, that say we're going to have 40,000-45,000 deaths. That's the current model the government's working off.
40, 45.
Those are the models they're working on. They think we're going to have this mass peak. They think in Cape Town, we're going, or in the Western Cape, they're going to not have enough beds. That's why they built that giant field hospital in the ICC. As we know, New York didn't use theirs. London didn't use theirs. Washington State didn't use theirs. I don't think they're going to use theirs in Cape Town unless they do it as a political ploy, frankly.
What, bring healthy people and put them in the beds just so that they
essentially. So remember, Minister Mkhize has said that they must quarantine people who are diagnosed as positive but are otherwise well. So how do you do that? So maybe that's what they're going to do with that place, or they're going to take people from hospitals who are relatively well and put them there instead of putting them in the hospital, so at least they can be shown to be using this thing they've spent tens of millions of rands on. I mean, that's good. But my data is that we peak. In fact, the Western Cape looks to peak in the next 10 days, mm-hmm, and then is on the downslope. Okay.
Good news. We should be celebrating. If that is in fact what is going to happen, people should be pleased about that. They shouldn't be hoping for this disease to be a part of our lives forever.
There's
something very mentally disturbing about people who want the pandemic and the lockdown to continue indefinitely. It's almost, you know, it's kind of nihilism. It's very weird. So two things, Jonathan, before you go, because George Meany's waiting to tell us some stories. Number one, let us just say rest in peace, Harambe. It was 4 years ago that that poor gorilla was killed for no good reason.
The world has not been the same since.
And look at how we've spiraled.
After his death, we got Donald Trump.
We got Donald Trump.
We got COVID-19.
Life has been immeasurably shittier since Harambe died. And it was all because we're being punished for our cruelty to that animal. So that's 100%. Number one. Number two, who must pay?
China, Gary. Right. China must pay.
Thank you. All right. Very good. Nice to talk to you. Dr. Jonathan Wood.
Cheers, man.
There we go. So he's also in the middle of all of that very interesting stuff. He also told us how you can get your workplace ready and what you need to do to make sure that you're good to go by Monday. George Meany, nice to see you. How are you?
Good and you, Gareth.
Excellent. It's Friday. I always love when George is on the show. Means that the weekend's almost ready to kick off. So, George, despite the fact that we've been under lockdown for 10 weeks and you've given us tremendously interesting stories and information throughout all of this, how is the world of cars, of car sales, of motoring? Because really it's been at the back of people's minds, not so much front and center as when we're usually stuck in traffic at a time like this.
Yeah, so while the country's been in lockdown for 10 weeks, my business has been in lockdown for 12.
Right.
So we went into lockdown slightly before the official lockdown period because we saw it coming and decided to just turn the business into a remote business. So we took 2 weeks to get the business ready. So it's been a long 12 weeks, 3 months, and the motoring industry suffered hugely. Nobody could sell cars in the month of April, used cars or new for that matter. Dealers were taking deposits on cars, but consumers could renege on the deal at the end of the day. A lot of dealers were very smart in the way they did that. And then we had the opening up of the sales and manufacturing part of automotive, which meant that dealers could start to sell cars from the beginning of May. The problem was that the licensing departments and testing stations did not open and are still not open.
Sure. Okay. So in other words, there are things that you guys did to try and in some way insulate yourselves from what was going to happen. But like so many other businesses in the country, we didn't know the lockdown would carry on for this long. And yeah, we weren't sure if there were unforeseeable things like what you've just said about, you know, getting a license, for example.
Yeah, I mean it's a huge deal. You know, if you can't change the ownership of a car, you can't really buy and sell it properly,
yeah,
can you?
Yeah, that's a big problem. Okay, so George, like if we go to level 3, does that change things for people who want to buy and sell cars?
So not really, because the motor vehicle retail sales dealerships are open. Manufacturing has started. They had a progressive approach to getting to 100% staff on dealership floors. Mm-hmm. The only problem was the licensing department. So from 1 June, licensing departments are now going to be open, and that's, I suppose, the next step in what level 3 brings. It wasn't a case that licensing departments were going to open under level 3. They were always going to open under level 4. They just didn't. And now they're going to be officially open from 1 June. But there's some teething problems that comes with the opening of the licensing departments and testing stations as well. The NATIS system that the country runs the licenses and your license disc and your certificates and driver's licenses on hasn't been booted up for 10 weeks. So nobody knows what's going to happen when those licensing departments and testing stations actually access the system. There's going to have been expired licenses. There's going to have been a whole bunch of gremlins that I think are going to come.
So much.
This will redefine systems offline.
Mm-hmm. Imagine all the dust on those computers and the smell that's going to come out of them when you switch them back on.
Exactly. But the licensing departments have said that if your license has expired, so if your car disc license has expired, the validity of that license is extended for a further 90 days as from 1 June.
All right.
So I think that's a good thing to give them time to, I think, get those gremlins and dust out of their computers. And then besides that, you know that motor dealers or car dealers, they give you trade plates when they sell you a car.
Mm-hmm.
Those trade plates have been extended with a further grace period of 6 months from the date of publication of the directions, which was the 20th of May.
Sure. All right.
So, locking down a country, I think, has implications that people don't understand. You know, the problem isn't locking down the country. The problem is unlocking the country.
Mm. It's very difficult, man. We're discovering new and quite scary things almost every day about what effects this is going to have. All right. So, George, you got a couple of stories for us this morning?
Yeah, so you know what a Tesla Model X is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is the SUV of Teslas.
I thought a Tesla Model X was Elon's new son, and his name somewhere has an X in it.
Well, could very well be. Maybe he invented the Tesla Model X in anticipation of his new son.
All right, so it's an SUV, huh?
Yes, it's an SUV. I don't know if you know this. I wasn't going to say this, but I don't know if you know this. But the first Tesla was the Tesla Model S.
No, I didn't know that.
The second Tesla was the Tesla Model X. I mean, I'm not talking about the pre-roadster, the first sports car, but second everyday car was the Tesla Model X, which is the SUV. And then they brought out the Tesla Model 3. And Elon wanted to call it the Model E. And you can see what the different models stand for.
SEX6.
So I'm not sure if there's any truth to that, but it's S3X, and those are the three models of the Tesla.
Okay.
So Tesla Model X. So they brought a bunch of cyclists, nine cyclists to be exactly, to be exactly.
Exact.
Friday. Yeah. The nine cyclists to be exact. And they made these cyclists cycle on dynamos to see how much they could charge this Tesla Model X. and they put these cyclists on nine stationary bikes and pedaled away for 20 minutes. And they managed to charge the Tesla Model X to get it a range of 2 kilometers. So the Tesla was dead and they got the range of 2 kilometers. So now you ask yourself, well, that's a lot of effort out of nine cyclists to get 2 kilometers out of the Model X. You know, carry a bicycle in the boot of your car if you want to run out of charge, and you can stand on the side of the road and charge your Tesla. But if you plug a Tesla into a wall socket, yeah, it will take you 1 hour to get the same charge.
So how long was it on the bike?
20 minutes, nine cyclists.
Huh. Okay, but you'd need nine cyclists. So, all right, better to plug it into the wall.
Yeah, better to plug it into the wall. But it just shows that, you know, these cars can be charged with clean energy.
I mean, the good news about this, we finally found a use for cyclists.
I was waiting for it.
We finally found something where they can not just be a pain in the ass and take up space on the roads and look stupid.
Next time I take my bike out, I'm going to look out for your car.
No, I wouldn't ever drive into a cyclist, George. I just think they're stupid.
Okay, moving swiftly along in that case. An angry neighbor, seeing as, you know, this is getting into that kind of discussion. An angry neighbor used expanding foam to silence his neighbor's Mustang's noisy exhaust. Now, do you know what expanding foam is?
It's almost like, isn't it? Like the whipped cream that you get in a can, and then you spray it, and it obviously expands to the size of whatever you put it in, and then it solidifies. It goes hard.
Exactly. They use it in building and construction work.
Yeah, to fill a gap, for example, between two bricks or whatever.
100%. So this one angry neighbor started getting upset with the sound of the Mustang from his neighbor. And eventually he didn't know, this neighbor didn't know where this noisy car was coming from. I don't know if you've ever heard noisy cars and sworn at them. Managed to track it down and realized that it was his neighbor. Found the car. Left a note, and the note said the following. So he took a can of expanding foam and sprayed it into the exhaust pipe.
Mustang,
and left a note on the car saying, "I finally found you. You want our attention? You don't want our attention. You have 14 days to fix the mufflers on your car, and then threatened, don't egg us on. You will regret it. We encourage you to call the police, install video cameras. Nothing will work." It then finished and ended by saying, "Fix your damn muffler."
What's happened? Have they? Because doesn't that expanding foam, won't that do huge damage to the car's exhaust?
Yeah. Well, it will obviously stop the car from if it can't get out, the car won't start.
Yeah.
I suppose you could dig it out and it'll be okay. I don't think it won't do any damage to the exhaust.
I have to say, like, unless you are one of those people who goes to the track and that's where you take your car, where you might want the noise because it's like some sort of thrill that you get out of it. I find those very loud cars very annoying too.
I do too. That's why I like electric cars.
Yeah. I think that if your car makes a big noise, what you're doing, it's fine if you like it, but what you're doing is imposing that noise on everyone else around you. Mm. And that's just not on.
I think people who drive with their windows open and force you to listen to their music.
Yes.
Yeah, and your music's usually shit when you do that. I've never heard anyone drive past me. I've never, ever gone, what a great song. I should listen to that now as well.
Yeah, I hate those people. Those people are so stupid because I would never do that.
Yeah, you do it yourself.
Sia does it every morning. He drives in listening to like Madonna and Beyonce.
Oh, those people. Damn them.
I've never gone, wow, Sia's so cool. I wish I could be like him and listen to music loud so that everyone around me has to hear it as well. Yeah, those guys. Wow.
Hasn't Sia produced a few songs?
Oh, such bad songs, George. I'm so glad you reminded us.
George, thank you for bringing up my talent.
Isn't he listening to his own songs when he drives in there?
Jeez. Thank God not. No one in the whole world has been listening to his song loud. People listen to it very softly because they're embarrassed.
As long as they're listening.
What's your song called again, Sia?
It's You. Started out the way, I never felt this way. I saw you standing there, and I thought my mind.
That should be called It's Me, Not You.
Yeah, and it sounds to me, sounds a lot like Tyka Nelson.
My next single features Tyka.
Yeah, I'm sure you two could collaborate, and you could make R5 each. All right, George, back called to you.
So, June will see a petrol price hike. Initially, the petrol price hike was rumored to be 50 cents, but it's probably going to be in the region of 1 rand and 15 cents, taking the a petrol price of unleaded 95 to 12 rand 67. So, the oil price seems to be starting to recover.
Typical. And, as soon as we get back in our cars, the oil price recovers. Dun, da, da, da.
Surprise, surprise. But the biggest problem in South Africa is naturally it's not the oil price that is the challenge. It is approximately 50% of the petrol price is going to taxes and levies. So around 5 rand 84 of every litre of petrol that goes into your tank is going to those taxes and levies.
Yeah, great.
And then finally, Rolls-Royce, can't understand this, is selling a 1/8 scale Cullinan. Have you ever seen a Rolls-Royce Cullinan?
No. I'm looking it up as we speak.
It is obviously Rolls-Royce, a luxurious car, but the Rolls-Royce Cullinan, they're selling a 1/8 scale toy for $17,000. I don't get it.
Well, this is because there are dumb people in the world who will buy it.
Yeah. Like, why now? I mean, this time?
Wow, it's a strange looking car. It's not a great Rolls-Royce, hey? It's really it's actually terrible. If you have one of those, you should be embarrassed. That's not saying you're rich and you have class. That's saying you're rich and you don't have class.
The only thing I like about it is the way in which the back door opens, which is forward.
It's terrible. Please, it's really bad. There's nothing about that car that redeems it. I'm sorry. Not to me. And beauty is in the eye of the beholder, so there may be someone who goes, oh, that's fantastic. I desperately want that. You're on your own.
Well, you can buy a model and a toy for 300,000 Rand, which is the price of an average car in South Africa.
All right. Very good.
Thanks,
George. Nice to speak to you, as always. And
thank you, George.
George, so you know, we did this webinar on Tuesday this week with Reg Lascaris and Timothy Maurice, and we talked about marketing and you know, kind of the new trends going forward. Might be worth us looking at doing a little webinar with you and some other people about the state of the motor industry. Because
God, that would be amazing. I watched that webinar and I loved it.
Happy to do it. Is there a recording of that webinar?
Yeah, sure. You can get it on cliffcentral.com, but I'll send you the links. And we should look at doing one and maybe getting you and some of the other people who are important in the motoring industry to talk about what's going to happen, what people think the world might look like after COVID, you know, sales, what kinds of cars people are most interested in. I know last week you and I spoke about how cars under the price tag of about 200,000, 250,000 Rand are all the rage at the moment. But yeah, maybe people would be interested in hearing a little bit of a debate, discussion, presentation about the state of the motor industry, and we can put that together. So I've actually got one or two requests on that. So yeah, let's do it.
Things are definitely changing. So I think it's valuable info.
Awesome. Thanks, George. We'll speak to you in the week.
Cheers, Gareth.
All right. George Meany and autotrader.co.za. You can also listen to Auto Central on Monday. And there are new episodes here and there. And obviously during lockdown, we've been doing them slightly differently. But you can always get your fix on a Friday with George. All right, everybody. Have a happy weekend. And we've got lots of cool stuff for you to keep listening to over the weekend. I actually spoke to Edith Fenter. We'll have her ready for you next week. We've spoken to a few other.
Oh, no, ready now.
Is it ready now? We're going straight into it? Oh, marvelous.
Yeah, boy.
Marvelous. This is what I like. This is efficiency, Sia.
Cold star for the day.
Yeah, very nice. Okay, so Sia, it's definitely Sia's day to shine.
And nice.
What for you? I was That's never right. the same.
That's right. And straight after the Edith Fenter interview, we will play you a version of Sia's song so you can get your
fix.
Oh,
no.
You don't have to listen, Leanne. That's the beauty of podcasts. You can avoid it if you like.
Yeah, I think I might.
I'm going to go and do some exercise, and then I've got a day full of meetings. How exciting. I hope your day is good, too, and we will speak to you on Monday, bright and early, 6 o'clock. Have a good weekend, everybody. Level 3. Leanne's going to the liquor store.
Woo!
All right. Be good.
CliffCentral.com